This is a BBC podcast. You can get all our podcasts and our terms of use at bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
And now, Extreme World, a new season of coverage on the BBC World Service. Our reporters have been dispatched around the globe to document and examine the sharpest differences between people and places. They're putting together a series of themed programmes. In the coming months, you'll hear reports about extremes of crime and pollution, education and business, dying and God. Here we look at extremes of corruption and start with a documentary from a place that's perceived to be extremely clean, Sweden. The anti-corruption watchdog Transparency International has again ranked Sweden as one of the cleanest places in the world to do business. Swedes are proud of this reputation. But recent headlines have provoked a national debate about whether it's a reputation Sweden really deserves. From Stockholm, Pascal Harter now presents part one of Extremes of Corruption.
Our story starts with a lawyer. He's just won a big case. He's out with his wife, celebrating with a trip to the theatre. His thoughts turn to the lawyer's clerk, who gave him the case to handle.
I thought I would send her two tickets as a gratitude for a good case.
He pays $130 for a pair of tickets and sends them, with a thank you card, to the clerk.
Because I was happy and I thought she could have some too of this happiness.
Carl Tengström is our lawyer, living in the Swedish capital, Stockholm. Carl's evening at the theatre has ended, but his story has just begun. And it's about to take a very Swedish twist.
Suddenly I got a letter from the Bar Association telling me that I had done wrong.
The letter accused Carl of sending the theatre tickets as a bribe to get more cases from the clerk.
And I was very astonished because I had never thought anything like that.
But it goes all the way to court. The judge finds him guilty and fines Carl $3,000.
It was a very expensive theatre ticket.
Yes, because it's $3,000 plus your legal representation.
Yes. After that, you know, I didn't get any appointments from the court in over a year.
You got no cases to defend?
No cases at all, no. I was put out in the cold.
Carl had to use his life savings to see his family through that year, but those theatre tickets had also cost him his reputation.
All my colleagues said, "You of all people, how could it happen?" Because they had the impression that I was a person that had never done anything wrong and always telling the truth and so forth.
Happily married Carl believes if he had been doing wrong in another sort of way, the court would have acquitted him.
If I sent this to her because what I really wanted was to ask her out to go with me, then I don't think the court had sentenced me.
So if you had pretended that what you really wanted was to start an affair with her, something
right.
Morally wrong, you would have got off.
That's right, yes.
So in Sweden, it's corruption that's the real taboo.
We have had so strangely stupid discussions about corruption.
Henning Mankell is the writer behind the worldwide hit Wallander, the books and TV series about the fictional Swedish detective who fights corruption on a daily basis.
There has always been a lot of illusions about Sweden. It was created an illusion, especially in Europe, that Sweden was a sort of perfect welfare society with no dark corners. And this wasn't obviously true. There has always been dark corners. So I really think that maybe what I try to do and what others try to do is to give a more relevant and more realistic view of Sweden as a decent society, but sometimes it's needed to take a torch and look into the dark corners.
I'm Pascal Harter, and for the BBC series Extreme World, I've come to a country with an extreme lack of corruption.
In Sweden, we don't even have the vocabulary for talking about corruption. We use English words as kickbacks and whistleblowers when we want to talk about this, because we don't have the words.
Year after year, Sweden scores among the cleanest countries to do business in the whole world. I want to know, though, is this too an illusion? First stop, Sweden's anti-corruption unit, and a meeting with the chief prosecutor, Gunnar Stettler.
This room is used 2.5 days a week, something like that.
What's it like to be the head of the anti-corruption unit in Sweden? Is it, I mean, does the phone ever ring?
The telephone rings frequently. They quarrel about decisions by the community if they don't have access to a road and if a neighbour has built a wall like this or paint the house green or something like that. They feel that those decisions were decided because of corruption.
That's it. That's the sum of corruption in Sweden, a suspect decision over exterior decorating. How does Sweden do it?
I think that you have corruption in every society. But in some respect, I think we have less corruption in Sweden. And that's not because we are better than you. It's because we have a tradition in Sweden that our authorities are transparent. So it prevents people from doing something that they shouldn't do.
For example, the prosecutor says, we have the right to take a look at his expenses or those of any public official in Sweden. But what we really want to take a look at is a bit of history, a clue as to how Sweden came to be so open and transparent. The Royal Guard are marching across a bridge in central Stockholm. I can see the sunlight bouncing off their well-polished, gleaming silver helmets. It's rather jaunty, non-threatening military music, but then after all, this country has been at peace for more than 200 years. So Sweden has had the time to make transparency a priority. No war for two centuries, that's pretty much unheard of in Europe. It's also had the resources. Sweden is rich.
I'm Arne Bixen, Professor of Development Economics at the University of Gothenburg. We are in Haga, which is an old part of Gothenburg, and it's quite nice area to stroll around in.
And there are people in very warm sort of puffer jackets walking their little dogs, and on our right, expensive-looking kitchenware and teapots.
Yeah.
So I have to ask, where are the signs of the economic crisis?
Well, not here anyway. This was the best year on record with no inflation, zero interest rates more or less on your house loans and wages going up. So we're doing all right, but we are not one of the richest countries in the world. Maybe we're number 15 or something.
Number 15, not a bad place to be.
No, it's very nice. And basically we've been a very successful exporter. Now we export half our GDP.
Half of your GDP comes from exports?
Yeah.
Sweden has quite a cuddly image abroad. You have a reputation as being decent, clean, caring. You're smiling. It's true,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yes, we are very nice.
What are the rules for Swedish business dealings within Sweden? Because the transparency that you have in this country is quite astounding.
Well, the transparency is huge when it comes to the government. The transparency with regard to firms and how they do business is it's not the same. That's quite a different thing. So you can keep your business secrets as you like.
With secrecy, is there room for corruption in business then? And if many Swedish companies are doing business abroad, in countries where there is more corruption, is it tempting to let standards slip and even hand over the odd bribe?
Most Swedish businessmen, they wouldn't even come up with the idea to bribe. They don't know how to do it.
Lennart Dahlgren knows about Swedish businessmen abroad. He worked for the Swedish furniture giant IKEA for 32 years. In 1998, he led IKEA's expansion into a country that has become a byword for corruption, Russia. Earlier this year, IKEA sacked two of its staff amid suspicion they might have at some point paid bribes in Russia.
There's a lot of people complaining about corruption in Russia, but it takes two for corruption, somebody giving and somebody taking. And if nobody is giving, there's nobody taking. It's as simple as that. We very clearly stated from the very beginning that we have no room for bribing in our budgets.
Didn't that hold IKEA back in Russia?
The investments that IKEA has made in Russia, they are the biggest investment in any other country in the world. And not only that, but IKEA is the biggest foreign investor in Russia, excluding the oil industry.
Wow. So it is big business then?
It is big business.
And you managed to do that without bribing?
And that's the reason.
Sweden sells more to the world, though, than just flat-packed furniture. It sells fighter jets, too. Sweden is proud of its Saab Gripen jets. Small countries don't tend to be leaders in military hardware. For many Swedes, the Gripens are an achievement akin to America putting a man on the moon. The Gripen advert I'm watching is pretty impressive. The jets are swooping over land and sea, firing and peeling away. At the end, the words come up on the screen, the wings of your nation. Saab has sold or leased Gripens to Hungary, the Czech Republic and South Africa, with the help of the British aerospace giant BAE. But the sale of arms is a far murkier business than selling IKEA furniture. So did the Swedish no-bribe ethos fall apart here? Well, earlier this year, the US Justice Department certainly came down hard on BAE for its role in promoting Sweden's jets.
In one specific instance, BAES caused the filing of false applications for export licenses for Gripen fighter jets to the Czech Republic and Hungary, by failing to tell the export license applicant or the State Department of £19 million BAES paid to an intermediary, with the high probability that it would be used to influence that tender process to favour BAES.
In other words, there was a high probability BAE employed a middleman to bribe members of the Czech and Hungarian governments to buy Saab's Gripen jets. For this and other deals, the US Department of Justice hit BAE with what it called one of the largest criminal fines in history, $400 million. BAE's chairman, Dick Oliver, told the BBC,
"This is clearly a serious moment. You know, we are paying a huge amount of shareholders' money, but this closes all of the actions and investigations involving the company."
That was the end of the story for BAE's role, but charities here want Sweden's investigation into Saab's role in the deal to be reopened. And here's why. The investigation that brought BAE to justice involves special agents from the FBI, Immigration and Customs, the Pentagon and other US agencies, as well as the UK Serious Fraud Office. Sweden's investigation into Saab involved just two people.
The Swedish prosecutor, he didn't have any means to investigate this. He had only two persons working for him, and this was the biggest corruption scandal in the history of Sweden.
Nils Razari is a Swedish investigative journalist who recently published a book about the Gripen affair.
I don't think there is any political will in Sweden to cope with corruption committed by Swedish companies abroad. For bribery committed abroad, so only two people have ever been convicted.
Ever in the history of Sweden?
Yeah, in the history of Sweden.
Neither were from Saab. In the end, Sweden's anti-corruption unit dropped the case. We asked Saab for an interview. They said no, but they gave us this statement.
"We do not consider that we have committed any illegal acts. For us at Saab, it is extremely important that we conduct our business with high ethical standards and we act with zero tolerance for bribery. The preliminary investigation was conducted over several years and Saab assisted at all times by openly sharing the information requested."
Well, it's obvious that they would make a statement like this. This is very important. They talk about zero tolerance for bribery. That's understandable, but it doesn't really matter if you ask Saab about it. You have to have an independent prosecutor who does a serious investigation. After that, we can tell if they are guilty or not.
Back to Gunnar Stettler, the chief prosecutor. It was his predecessor at the anti-corruption unit who dropped the case against Saab. The OECD criticised the unit for not putting enough resources into the case.
I do think we need more investigators, but I also think that it's a problem still that we are not that aware of corruption in Sweden. And if you're not aware of corruption in Sweden, you can say a little bit naive. You don't allocate resources, and you really don't understand the importance of fighting corruption. And if you don't understand that, you will have problems because people don't think that they're going to be investigated. They will probably take the chance to be a little corrupt.
Does that extend to Sweden's royal family? Through the cobbled streets of old Stockholm, I've just come across a sort of golden stone spire poking up into the blue sky. It was back in July that Princess Victoria got married here. It's her local church. For the honeymoon, the royal couple flew on a private jet to a luxury yacht, all paid for by a Swedish business tycoon. That the woman who will one day be head of state accepted such a huge gift, a favour, some would say, is a problem as far as Sweden's biggest daily newspaper is concerned.
I think we all want our public officials to be free from potential business interests and that they are serving the public interest, not any business interest.
I meet Doug and Newhurter's political editor, Peter Wolodorski, round the corner from the church where the wedding took place. He says the danger is that even if the royal couple don't repay the gift in some way, they've still put themselves in debt to a private businessman.
Well, a wealthy billionaire and the owner of the world's largest language training firm, I mean, he's doing investments all over the world. And I think it might be very helpful for a person like that to have the royal family as a door opener when he's doing investments abroad. So there is this potential risk that the royal family repays a favour to a man like that.
Has there been a turn in the tide in Sweden since you wrote your article?
I think so. I mean, the prosecutor's office looked at this issue and they almost started a formal investigation. So I don't think that they view this as unproblematic. You will have to ask the prosecutor.
The anti-corruption unit decided not to launch an investigation because
the royal family or the head of state couldn't be punished according to the bribery law, because that law wasn't written in that way so it could be used against the royal family.
The bribery law can't be used against the royal family?
No.
If it had been a politician who had accepted this kind of honeymoon gift, would you have started an investigation?
That's a question I'm not going to answer, because then I answer what I think about that special wedding gift, and it's not for my office or for me to discuss that in theory.
Gunnar Stettler can't discuss it, but others can. A national debate about corruption has begun here. Now, this is what you expect Sweden to look like. A tiny bird with a yellow chest and grey feathers has just taken flight out of the long grass next to me and soared off into the air. It is incredibly peaceful here. There's a few boats bobbing on the calm sea. It looks like a silvery lake, actually, as the low sun is breaking through the cloud. This idyllic place is the home of the writer Henning Mankell.
Well, I think people are thinking this is very bad. Couldn't the king and the queen pay for this? Is it really necessary to do it in this little dirty way? I think people are a bit disappointed with Victoria, actually. People feel, not necessary.
When we visit crime writer Henning Mankell outside Gothenburg, there's a story about corruption dominating the headlines.
Just the last months, we have found out in this city, Gothenburg, some quite terrifying examples of corruption between the government of the city and construction companies. And people are shocked about what they learn.
Why do you think Swedes are so shocked when they hear about corruption in their own country?
I think it is a perception that is a bit naive, that these things does not happen in our country. There is sometimes among many people a feeling that we are standing over these kinds of things. And that is why people have been shocked. But I also think it is a feeling of betrayal, that people feel that they have been betrayed. They have showed confidence in these civil servants and politicians, and now they show their ugly faces that they are acting like anywhere in the world. And I think people feel a little betrayed.
Is Sweden becoming a more corrupt place?
I hope not. And I don't think it is a fact. But I think it's because now we have found out what's going on in Sweden. So now we have the possibility to stop it. If we do not react now, then I think the problem will grow.
There's every reason to expect that Sweden will react. It's true it's not as squeaky clean as we, or most Swedes, thought it was. But the people we've met here do seem committed to doing something about that. Listen to Helen Waxberg. She was a speaker at a corporate anti-bribery conference in Stockholm.
Sweden wants to stay, well, best in the class.
You think you are best of the class?
No, we want to be best in the class. We want to see no bribery around Swedish companies. And there is a very clear focus from the corporate side to try to ensure compliance.
One delegate in the crowd, an American who lives here in Stockholm, Adam Green, is confident that Swedes can clean up their act and even one day be best in class.
Because in America we are so regulated by rules, you may instinctively first look to see is this permitted by the rules or not. A Swede will more be alert to does it feel wrong? Does it not pass the smell test? And honestly, if you look at the region again, you see that it's as a whole been reasonably good when it comes to transparency and corruption. I think that's not so much something to thank the law for as to thank the people for.
This BBC programme has been about one extreme of corruption. In the next programme in our series, Extreme World, we'll look at a place where it's extremely difficult to even avoid corruption, Somalia.
Extremes of Corruption was presented by Pascal Harter. The producer was Neil Rozelle and the editor was Jeremy Skeet. That second programme in the series on Somalia will also be available as a podcast. And if you want to see some photos and learn how the programmes fit into the larger Extreme World season, go to bbc.com/extremeworld.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.